Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, here we go on a loaded Wednesday. This in Los Angeles is the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we're on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. Joy Taylor looks like $1 zillion today. Look at that.
Thank you, Tom.
Look at Joy Taylor. Sophisticated, amazing. I was thinking about this. CM Punk's on the show today.
Yes.
Joel Klatt's going to yell at me on the show today.
Yes.
Nick Wright will make fun of me on the show today. David yes. West, former NBAer's on the show. He looks great, by the way. He's lost like 20 pounds. Those power forwards get out of the league.
He's not going to argue with you today?
No, he probably won't. He's a good dude. Bucky Brooks, we're packed today. How are you?
I'm great. Good morning.
Good morning. Let me just give you a hypothetical. So let's say you had a really, really, and I'll just speak for guys here. You had a brother. And your brother was more successful than you, but he lived in North Carolina and you lived in Texas, so you didn't have to be reminded of it every day. But what if your brother lived, you lived in Los Angeles and your brother lived right next to you, and every year he had a new car and his kids went to a private school, and every time they went on a vacation, they were a suntan, they looked great. And you got to be reminded every day how much more successful. His wife's got beautiful ring on. Looks like a skating rink. She got a new ring and a new car and a new... Kind of be... After a while, you'd be like, enough already. I'm tired of my... We all get that LeBron and the Lakers play in the same building as Kawhi and the Clippers. We all know historically the Lakers matter and the Clippers are irrelevant, right? Did you see what happened last night with LeBron? Oh, yeah, he was amazing again. He's now the best point guard in the league. The Lakers are the best team in the league, 12-2. Statistically, it is unbelievable. He last night, first player with a triple-double versus all 30 teams. He's all over Instagram, giving shout-outs to his mom. He's all, oh, my Lord. And the Clippers are wondering tonight, is Kawhi going to play tonight? Because he's missed 5 of the 14 games. When your neighbor's buying a new car and buying his wife a new skating rink to put in her hand and they keep putting it in your face... Once again, the Clippers are invisible. The Lakers brand, which has always been bigger, is winning, and their superstar is playing every night and playing his ass off. The Clippers brought in Kawhi. They didn't just bring him in for June. Don't get me wrong. It works in Toronto. It works in San Antonio. But this is an incredibly competitive, distracted market. The beach, the mountains, the shopping, the Dodgers, USC, UCLA, soccer teams, 2 NFL teams, and LeBron shares the building, and LeBron's playing every night. Remember Steve Ballmer? The Clippers didn't bring Kawhi in just to be icing. They want some cake, too. They brought him in to get market share, to get some buzz, to get some headlines, to get talked about. Is he playing tonight? Because, you know, he can't play on back-to-backs, even though he's fairly young. And LeBron's absolutely on fire. You cannot tell me there's not tension in the room in Clipperland. You can't convince me of it. By the way, when Steve Ballmer had that press conference, remember that press conference? And Steve Ballmer's a highly energized guy to begin with. Remember this?
I got to say, I'm just fired up to be here today. It's pretty cool. Pretty damn cool. Woo! You don't think we can win some ball games this year with Paul and Kawhi on our team? We're going to win some ball games. I got to say, being number 2, being number 4, we're only here for one reason. We want to win it all. There's only one reason. From now on, it's all about the Larry O.B.
And if they don't win, let's say, you know, like LeBron gets to the finals. Oh, wait, he does when he's healthy every year. You're not winning... October, November, December, January, February, March, April, May. So Lakers going to win all those months? You put all your eggs in the basket. Like, for June. I don't think Steve Ballmer did that. I think Steve Ballmer wanted market share. I think he wants a new arena. I don't think he wants to be second fiddle a single day in Los Angeles. And maybe they win, and it doesn't matter. And I'm just Jerry West doesn't care today. But when your neighbor's buying his wife a skating rink to put in her finger every other year, and the Lexus and the private school for the kids, and you're reminded every single day, he was always the apple of mom's eye, and he still got it. LeBron is just kicking the Clippers' butt, owns the city. And I get load management. Like, it works. I get it. But I think it works better in Toronto than Los Angeles. We got major market media, major distractions, and LeBron owns this city, and Kawhi on most nights now isn't even playing or competing against him. I think there's tension in the Clipper building. I don't think they love it. I think you can say you'll tolerate stuff, but God, doesn't it sting a little now that LeBron is, oh wait, the best player in the league, and maybe by like a yard or two. They didn't bring Kawhi in here just for the icing. They wanted a little cake. And the story tonight, nobody's sure if he's going to play, and he's already missed 5 of 14 games. I get the load management. I do think it plays better when your neighbor isn't jamming it in your face every night and getting all the headlines. All right, so I read a column from a Dallas writer. Tim Kalishaw says, is the Cowboys key to upsetting the Patriots Dak Prescott out-dueling a Tom Brady? No, that's not really what it's going to be. Let me first state this. 5 of Dallas's 6 wins, let me just state this, are against Eli Manning benched, Case Keenum benched, Josh Rosen benched, Jeff Driscoll backup, and Daniel Jones in his 7th NFL start. Aaron Rodgers ate up the Cowboys. Sam Darnold ate up the Cowboys. Kirk Cousins ate up the Cowboys. And Teddy Bridgewater beat the Cowboys. Okay, Dallas's defense has struggled to take the ball away from bad quarterbacks, and they're not getting a ton of sacks against average offensive lines. But this game, to me, does not boil down to Dak. Dak's good. It doesn't boil down to the Cowboys' offensive liner, Zeke. They're good. Or the weapons. All good. Dak's getting his money, should get his money. This is a referendum on Jason Garrett. Las Vegas has made the spread in this game 6.5 points. That is an absurd line for a New England team that can't score and a Dallas team that may have 8 of the 10 best players in this game. This is all about Jason Garrett. And if Dallas loses Sunday against the Patriots, they will be 0-4 against Green Bay, Minnesota, the Saints, and the Patriots. Jerry is not paying him to beat Miami and the rebuilding Giants. He's paying Jason Garrett, because now we know Dak's fine. Dak's better than fine. Dak's probably now top 10. Dak's improving in every single statistical category. Sunday, this column, Sunday's not about Dak. It's not about Dak. Dak's getting his money. Dak deserves every penny of it. Dak's made Jerry a fortune. It is a complete and utter referendum on Jason Garrett. And when Jerry Jones gets into his Gulfstream on Sunday night, 3.5-hour bumpy flight out of windy, snowy New England, and he loses by 10 to a 41-year-old Tom Brady or 42-year-old with no deep threat, no Gronk, he's not going to be happy. It's going to be varying degrees of how ticked off Jerry Jones is. You know, I don't think it's a coincidence that Jerry Jones talked at length, told a story about a certain coach he bumped into years ago this week, the coach being, of course, Bill Belichick.
I was skiing after our season was over, the Cowboys season was over, and I was renting skis for my grandkids, and there was a line, and somebody bumps up against me a few times, and I turn around, and there was this guy that I couldn't make of him because he had his ski stuff on and goggles, and it was Bill. And, of course, he no longer had a job. He had been with Cleveland, and they'd let him go up there. He said, boy, listen, said, I can coach. Said, if you ever get an opportunity, don't forget about me. I've thought about that many times. You never know when you can find a great coach.
interesting week to bring up that story and tell it on radio, don't you think? Sunday is not about Dak. It's about Jason Garrett. And if they lose, and maybe by over a touchdown, Jerry's going to make a decision on that 3.5-hour flight. And he may be telling another story about Belichick on the radio Monday in Dallas.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
So the committee comes out every Tuesday night. You know, they wait about a month and then they come out here's who we think deserves to be in the final four. And then they always have those two teams, 5 and 6, and we kind of pay attention to that aren't in the final four but are about ready to get in. And it may freak some people out, but it's LSU 1, Ohio State 2, Clemson 3, Georgia 4, Alabama 5, and Oregon 6. Now, Tua's not playing for Alabama, so I don't think they're going to end up in the championship. But I will tell you this. If Bama beats Auburn in 2 weeks, my guess is they're in. And if LSU beats Georgia, and I think they will, because I do think Bama's going to beat Auburn, and I do think LSU's going to beat Georgia, and the committee is telling you we want two SEC teams in. That's what they're telling you. That's why Oregon being 6, not 5, matters. I do think Bama, even without Tua, is going to beat Auburn, and I do think LSU is going to beat Georgia, although I think both games will be highly competitive, and then we'll have Ohio State, Clemson, and two SEC teams. I have never been a believer in being loyal to places I grew up. I'm not loyal to the Seahawks. If they didn't have Russell Wilson, I wouldn't like them. I'm not loyal to Oregon just because I used to work there, and I think it's an amazing place. Two things happened in college football. Oregon scheduled tough and lost to Auburn. And if Alabama beats Auburn with their backup quarterback, Alabama's getting in. I really appreciated Oregon scheduling tough, but you got to win those games in September. And Oregon did not beat Auburn. Auburn has a freshman quarterback playing his first game. Auburn was favored, and Auburn won in a neutral field. You got to take care of business. Although I do appreciate the effort scheduling Auburn, and you lost close. The second thing is, the SEC is the best conference. Doesn't matter where I grew up or who I covered for a long time. Right now, the SEC has the number one ranked undefeated team, LSU. They have the number one rated one-loss team, Alabama. They have the one-loss team is Georgia. They have the number one ranked two-loss team, Florida. They have the number one ranked three-loss team, Auburn. Okay? So the SEC is the best conference. And the committee's telling you, we want two teams from that conference in. That's what they're telling you. And they're telling you, you know, Oregon's good, but they went up against Auburn and lost. And if Alabama beats them, you have a common opponent. And they, if they can beat them with a backup quarterback, we're putting them in. And I don't have a problem with it. I think the SEC is the best conference. I don't think it's necessarily close. And I do think Oregon scheduled right, but didn't finish the job against Auburn. If they win that game, they're in and nobody complains. So I don't have a problem at all where the committee is. I may have grown up out west. I do think it's bad for business to have a Final Four with Clemson, LSU, and Alabama or Georgia in it. It's incredibly southern. The ratings in college football, Denver West, have been going down for the last 5 or 6 years. You need to have a Western representative. I think you could certainly argue Oregon, from a business standpoint, would be better in than another SEC team. I think having Denver West, San Francisco, LA, Seattle, Denver, Phoenix engaged matters. It's going to feel very southern again. But if the South's got the best college football, and I don't even think it's disputable right now, I do think Ohio State's the best team. I think they'll be a hot knife through butter against LSU's lousy defense, but I don't have a problem this morning. I would love to say, Oregon, you deserve to be in, but you scheduled tough, outplayed Auburn, and lost to a freshman quarterback in his first game, and you may have the best quarterback in college football. Not just scheduling tough, you gotta win that game. Oregon didn't. That's why they'll probably be on the outside looking in.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
I said it before. It's one thing if your brother is more successful than you. It's another if he lives next door to you and constantly reminds you that he's more successful than you. And Kawhi Leonard's not playing potentially again tonight. And LeBron James is having a ridiculous season. Not ridiculous because it's LeBron. It's because he's in his, 17th year, and he appears to be, I watch him now regularly, the best point guard easily in the sport. And I do think there's some tension in the Clipper building as they got Kawhi not just for June. They wanted to get a buzz, market share, relevance. LeBron has squished all of that. He's just playing out of his gourd. Via the Cowher Global Satellite Network, Nick Wright. By the way, I have defended load management. But I think it works a lot better in Toronto than it does in Los Angeles when LeBron's sharing the arena. And I do think the Clippers are looking at LeBron thinking, their guy's on fire. Our guy can't play back-to-back. I could be being hyperbolic on this, but it does feel like it's a complete facial to the Clippers, does it not?
No, this is something you are getting exactly right. Unlike the, if I need one stop, Kawhi. If I need one bucket, Kawhi. That is, of course, if it's every other Tuesday when he's playing. You are now back to reality, which is the Lakers have the best defensive player in the league, Anthony Davis. They have the best player in the league, LeBron James, who in a nice trick in year 17, all just become a rich man's Jason Kidd and be the best point guard in basketball and average 11 assists a game, because I've never done that before, so that'll be fun. And yeah, of course, the Clippers are anxious. And I think your analogy is spot on about your better, more successful brother. This is why I had to move out of L.A. to New York to get away from you. Couldn't stare at you every damn day. And the most important part is, and I hear everyone say it, and all my friends in the analytics community, I get it. Well, as long as they win in June, it won't matter. Because of what they're doing, they might not get to June. I will say it again. Lakers, Clippers, Rockets, Nuggets, Jazz. Those are five excellent teams. One of them goes home after round one. Three of them go home after round two. Because of the load management, the seeding the Clippers are staring at could be against, the Denver Nuggets in round one. Or maybe you beat the Nuggets in round one, and now you're in Houston for round two. And so it is an enormous bet. And one last point on this. You said it worked in Toronto. Toronto was the one seed the year before Kawhi got there. They went 17-5 without him. They this year are not thriving, but more than surviving without Kawhi Leonard. That is not the team he has with the Clippers, and the Eastern Conference playoff picture is not the playoff picture they have out West. It's an enormous gamble. It would be in any city in the Western Conference, even more so when LeBron James is reminding the entire world, as has been the case every healthy year since year three, he's the best player in basketball, and it's not even close.
Let me shift to this. Carmelo Anthony came back last night. There's three or four NBA players I never bought into. Blake Griffin, Derrick Rose, Carmelo Anthony. I'm not denying Hall of Fame level talent. Carmelo will get Hall of Fame votes. He'll get in. That's not an issue. But he was terrible last night. Big shocker. Here's the other thing, though. LeBron James rushes to Twitter last night. Oh, it's so great to have you back. Should be noted, LeBron last 4 or 5 years could have gotten Carmelo on any of his teams. You know, like LeBron, he's got a bunch of guys last year that couldn't shoot in head cases. He couldn't get Carmelo on his team last year. I could call Nick Wright the greatest. I could call you the greatest friend.
Hold on, you're arguing?
I'm arguing that LeBron phony on Twitter. Oh, if I kept saying, Nick, you are the best. I love Nick Wright. And we had a bunch of openings on FS1, and it was all the guys you compete against. I mean, this Carmelo thing is nonsense, right?
Okay. Colin, you will be my brother forever, and you becoming someone that I looked up to from afar to now becoming one of my closest friends is one of the greatest things that's ever happened to me.
You darn right.
Understand this. if you are ever washed and I am still in my prime, I ain't inviting you on my TV show. I don't know if that day will come, but it won't be about our friendship. And so, listen, Melo gets Melo 14 straight years, 20 or more points per game. First 14 years start his career. The people who have done that are Kareem and LeBron, and there's only four people ever, and Carmelo Anthony. So we should put respect on what he accomplished. You said he'll get Hall of Fame votes. Walks in, first ballot, no question about it. But he's in a different phase of his career, and unlike Dwight Howard, Dwight can reinvent himself because Dwight at his best, even when he was prime Dwight, defense and rebounding. So come off the bench for the Lakers, give us minutes of defense and rebounding, and you can be useful. Carmelo in his prime, throw him the ball, automatic bucket. That's a tough reinvention. And there's no shame in this. That entire class of guys, 0-3 in the class surrounding it. Let's look at it. Chris Paul, different place in his career. Dwight, different place in his career. D. Wade, out of the league. Chris Bosh, out of the league. The only reason we look bad upon Melo is because the one guy who's the face of that generation, LeBron, to bring it back, is still the best player in basketball. And listen, man, the Lakers just didn't need him. I'm sure LeBron called up Jeannie Buss and was like, hey, let's get my guy on the team. And she's like, LeBron, you play basketball for the team. You have nothing to do with personnel decisions. We're not going to take your calls anymore. I'm sure he did everything he could for his friend. It just didn't work out or something like that. Either way, I'm glad Melo ain't on the Lakers, but I'm happy he's in the league. It's all working out for me.
I want to get to an NFL thing. We got in a big argument this week on Twitter. I'll get to that in a second. I keep hearing, the Jacksonville, first it was LT and the Chargers are going to beat New England, and then it was the Big Ben and all of his weapons. And then it was the Houston Texans in their Letterman jackets. And then it was Andrew Luck and the Colts. And then Jacksonville had a couple cracks at him. And now it's Patrick Mahomes. We keep looking for the team that's going to end the run. And I'm watching the Chiefs Monday, and I'm thinking, they needed four picks to beat an unathletic old Phillip Rivers. That game was in doubt at the end, and I'm thinking, this team doesn't run. They can't stop the run. I don't think they match up with Baltimore right now at all. I don't think they match up with New England at all. Aren't you a little bit concerned about the team you grew up rooting for?
All right, so the Monday night game was not good. They were lucky to escape with a win.
Yes.
I will grant you that. But your argument that we keep looking for the team who will beat New England, my counter would be 2 points. One is, New England has never been this vulnerable. The Chiefs may have needed a number of picks to beat the Chargers. The Patriots needed a blocked punt to beat the Bills and needed a touchdown, really the nicest pass thrown all night this Sunday, thrown by a wide receiver because their quarterback is cooked to beat the Eagles. Oh, he's cooked, Colin. You know it. I know it. Everyone knows it. He's cooked. And so we also have direct evidence of the Chiefs playing the Patriots last year and taking a lead in the fourth quarter. Defense couldn't hold it. We have the AFC Championship game where Tom Brady, your golden god, threw an interception to end the game, and Dee Ford's offsides and whatever. It is what it is. They lost that game. But to act like they are not closer, the Colts with Andrew Luck played them in the playoffs and got annihilated. Phillip Rivers has never beaten him in his entire 15, 16-year career. The Chiefs are going to be the team that does it if Baltimore doesn't get there first. You say the Chiefs don't match up well against Baltimore. Lamar Jackson's 14-3 as a starter. Those three losses must have all hurt your heart because one came to Baker and two came to Mahomes. Now, I know those Mahomes wins don't count, because somehow he's 1-8 in Colin Coward's 8 career biggest games, which makes no sense whatsoever, because 2 of those came against Baltimore. One of them clinched the 1 seed last year. Oh, that game doesn't matter. But the game against Seattle, that was meaningless. It was a loss. It was a big game. But I digress. The Chiefs have some holes. They have a bye week to fix it, and you want nothing to do with them in Foxborough in a few weeks when they show up to play your beloved Patriots.
All right. I just see, I don't know what they do well besides Andy Reid designs plays and Mahomes is a magician, but I'll take your word for it.
Finally, what do the Pats do well? What do the Patriots do well?
Coach, win, clutch, defense, secondary, situational football, of the 27 things they're great at. But I digress. Now, we got to get to this. 2 minutes left.
Sorry.
You and I got in a Twitter spat. I generally don't get in those. You get in those every day. That is, you love arguing.
No.
I don't at all. I've got my portfolio to tend to. Anywho, the point being is you and I argued about James Harden, who apparently is lighting up November. And I'm like, congrats on that. It means nothing. It will translate to nothing. He'll be exhausted in April and May. And go ahead, have your say now, because I did at the very end of the argument win, which I don't on Twitter much. So go ahead.
Okay, well, it's very interesting. Because you just employed in the beginning of this a strategy I don't often go to, but I do like to have in reserve, which is when I lose an argument, I do claim the other person is just a far more seasoned arguer than me, and that's why. But that's neither here nor there.
All right.
Listen, we've got to be able to appreciate the moment. It can't all be about destination. James Harden might average 40 points per game this year.
All right.
Last year, his team was decimated by injury. He averaged 36 and carried him where they did. The season before, he was league MVP, and they're the only team to threaten the Kevin Durant healthy Golden State Warriors. We're up 15 in game 7 till it fell apart. And if that means, well, they therefore can't win a title, I just disagree with it. It can't all. I'm really, really enjoying my large adult Slovenian son, Luka Doncic, and what he's doing. They're not going to win the title.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean we can't enjoy what they're doing. He is scoring like Wilt as a perimeter player.
Yeah.
Maybe it's ugly and maybe it won't end in a championship, but I can appreciate the journey, not just the final destination. That's the only point I was making before you tapped out of our debate.
It's actually a reasonable debate. I will say this about James Harden. And in this world of load management, Harden, you know, I don't think Harden actually has done a great job. He's starting to now defending his position, which is dude plays his you-know-what off every night, and he brings it. And if you bring your son to a game in Houston, James plays, scores 40, and you go home on that drive home with your mom and dad, and it's one of the five best nights of your career. And I grew up with downtown Freddie Brown, and he played every night. There is a real value in that. I'm sorry it matters. That's your best argument, not the Wilt one you made on Twitter.
Oh, but, thank you.
All right, I got to go now. It's Nick Wright, first things first. All right, see you, buddy.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
The media tends to, if a star gets traded to a team, we're all in on the star. AB's going to the Raiders. It's going to be unbelievable. And Khalil Mack's going to the Bears, and it's going to be unbelievable. And the truth is, a lot of these trades, they don't work out. Some do. But I would say more than 50% of trades don't work. The player doesn't fit the culture. The player gets paid a ton. Our expectations are unrealistic. A star gets traded to an NFL team, and you have to make sacrifices to keep him on the team, like offensive line. But Odell Beckham was talking this week about, Mike Tomlin, the coach of the Steelers, and how Tomlin disrespected him after Cleveland beat him. And, I said to him after the game, "You disrespected me." He said, "I know who you are, and that we're doubling you all game and this and that." And I've never seen a team in my life in the NFL like the Cleveland Browns. They can never let go of last week. I think this is the 11th straight week where they're talking with a big game coming up, like a game they can't lose, talking about last week. So I am officially, they don't have a logo on their helmet. I'm officially giving the Cleveland Browns a logo on their helmet. The Cleveland rearview mirrors. They never are looking ahead. They're always looking behind. This is the new logo of the Cleveland Browns, the Cleveland rearview mirrors. Every single week, it's Wednesday. They're still talking about last week. Just go beat Miami. But the other thing is, the media does tend to, whoever gets the star in the NFL, you think you win the trade. And it just doesn't work that way. So I didn't love the OBJ trade to Cleveland. I said before, expectations are through the roof. I don't think he wants to live in Cleveland. They've already got Jarvis Landry, David Njoku, Nick Chubb, and they have huge offensive line issues. Do not give away picks that you could solve in the offensive line. Baker Mayfield's going to have a rookie head coach. Do not give him OBJ, rookie head coach, global icon, and move offensive linemen. And I went this morning to look at the grades, the OBJ trade. So they gave up a first rounder. There were four good offensive linemen in that draft they could have had. They didn't get any of them. They gave it up. A third rounder they gave up. The Giants got two defensive linemen for that. One of them, Dexter Lawrence, Clemson, having a great year. And they also gave up a player, which wasn't really crucial. But all the grades, Sports Illustrated, it was all A's and B pluses and D's and F's for the New York Giants. But the Giants are no worse for wear without Odell Beckham Jr. They're a rebuilding team like they were with him, and they've got some nice young defensive linemen. And they'll go again in this draft. The Giants will go heavy defense, which they should. But with OBJ, I've got one touchdown in 10 games, a 4-6 team, which is distracted. Baker Mayfield's gotten worse, and OBJ is the second-best receiver they have this year. You tell me. Does Cleveland get an A for that? Do the Giants get a D or an F for that? So I think it's just a cautionary tale. When you get these drafts with superstars, you have to give stuff up to get them. And Cleveland needed offensive line help, and they gave up a first and a third round pick, and that probably would have been a starter and an immediate starter on the O-line and a starter by midseason on the O-line, and I don't think they should have made this move. I did not go crazy with it. I did not go over the top. I said, I don't think it's going to pan out. We got a guy that doesn't correlate. His production doesn't correlate to wins. With a veteran coach like Belichick or an Andy Reid, OBJ would be fine. Freddie Kitchens is young. He's going to be a little over his skis as he learns on the job. I don't think OBJ, a global icon, is a perfect fit. It also put pressure, I believe, on Baker Mayfield to get the ball to OBJ. And we've been saying this for months. It's just now recently Cleveland found their identity as they're 4-6. Cleveland struggled with their identity the first 6-7 weeks. Their identity without OBJ would have been very clear. We're a run team. And Jarvis Landry's a great possession receiver. That would have been a very easy identity. I think OBJ clouded their identity, and that's why they're 4-6 and why they won't make the playoffs.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Love getting NBA veterans, 15 years in the league, multiple titles, multiple All-Star games. A tough guy, a smart guy, David West. It is an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. I met you for the first time this morning.
Yes, sir.
I've been looking forward to this all show. So let's address something that you have proximity to in the last couple of years, the Warriors. Mm. It always felt like there was a lot more drama than they would let on. Obviously.
Right.
Can you tell us now firsthand, was there a little more drama, KD, Draymond, Clay, yeah, than was being let on?
I think it was more drama than we allowed to get out.
Okay.
Right. We were able to control the environment. But, you know, it was natural because guys are highly competitive. We were there for one reason, like to win on the biggest stage.
A lot of alpha stars.
Yeah. And so, you know, it. I think initially – you know, we were more or less worried about Steph, and Steph was the one that took control.
He did.
Yeah, he took control right away.
When KD got there, he just said,
took
now, how did he do it? Did
Before the issue could arise of whose team it was or who was the guy who was going to get the ball to start the game, you know, we saw right away in, like, the first couple pickup games, like, he deferred. Like, he was the bigger player and just said, you know what, I'm going to –
give KD the ball.
Yeah, we're going to start playing through KD in the fourth quarter. We're going to close with KD.
Were you surprised?
I wasn't, you know, because, you know, Steph is that type of dude. Like,
he's smart.
Yeah, man, he knows how to navigate it and keep things, you know, cool. The environment in Golden State is his personality. It's his, you know, it's, you know, just the same way in San Antonio, it was Tim's sort of personality, Tim's
low key, work hard, bust arse,
right?
Be tough,
right? But Golden State was Steph, and you know that was a part of his way of sort of leading the group. It was like, look, I'm going to take a back seat. Let's get the ball to KD. I'll find a way to do what I need to do.
And everybody was okay with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because KD was the new guy.
Mm-hmm.
Now KD, and I say this about Aaron Rodgers and KD. Some people are more sensitive. They're on their phone. KD, he's not married. Aaron Rodgers isn't married. He sits around on his phone. Is it fair to say KD is sensitive to the phone, criticism, social media? Did you sense it?
I would say that he's engaged and he knows what's going on. And he's not afraid to interact when he has to interact. Sometimes he shows his hand a little bit, you know, because he lets things bother him. But
he does.
You know, for him, it's more or less being like someone who's trying to maximize what he is.
I think
KD is absolutely trying to get the most out of who he is and, you know, maximize himself as a basketball player.
Were you shocked, David, he left?
I was.
Where were you? Car, restaurant?
No, I was home, but I just remember, I had spoken to him maybe like a couple weeks before the decision. And then, you know, obviously it talked throughout the year. And I just felt like, you know, he was in a position to really cement himself, you know, get into that sort of legend with the Warriors type thing. I still think he's got a great legacy with the Warriors, but I thought it was the one place he might just say, you know what, I'm cool here. I thought he loved the city. He loved the people.
Did he?
Yeah, I thought so.
Did he and Kerr get along?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's hard not to get along with with Steve. I mean, Steve is.
But he and Draymond. Draymond could wear you out.
Well, I would say.
Draymond is.
But you know who Draymond is. Like, Draymond is a guy, is, again, highly motivated, you know, has like 30 chips on his shoulder, you know, just from people who questioned his ability. So Draymond's never going to change who he is because that's given him, you know, a chance to be great.
Totally get it.
And so KD knows that. And I think the thing with you know, Steve and Dre is, you know, you've got to sort of see who they are, know this is what they've been to be successful, and you figure it out. And I thought KD did a good job of that. He knew what Draymond – I mean, Draymond's the one that recruited him to Golden State.
Was so this David West joining us? Was it possible, David, this was like a Hollywood marriage? There was too much wattage. It was just never destined to be a 10-year marriage. KD, Warrior, Steph.
Right.
It's just like you see Shaq and Kobe. You're like, that's great.
It's going to last for a few years. Right.
There's just too much wattage in the room.
Right.
Did it,
right.
Now does it look like, in retrospect, that was it?
Yeah, well, and I think, you know, we had – you know, Steve did a great job of just managing day to day, the expectations, you know, the pressure that comes with it, but then also the pressure that guys put on themselves. You know, but then the one thing that I thought was most humbling for me in that whole environment is, and sort of gets overlooked, is these guys are unbelievably hard workers. You know what I mean? So even with all of that, all of the success, all of the hoopla and the fanfare around, you know, what they are and what they, you know, potentially could be in terms of all-time greats. The idea of, like, the consistent work and the consistent effort to be the best at what they do.
What's Gucci Mane say? Work harder, nobody cares.
Nobody cares, work
right.
harder.
Yeah. Right.
Gucci Mane.
Right.
That's who I draw. Well, are you guys laughing at my Gucci Mane references?
Yes.
David West respects my Gucci Mane
right,
reference.
Right.
My staff laughs at me.
Right.
Work you can harder. Just call him Gucci, Colin.
I can call him Gucci?
Yes.
I don't think we're on a first name basis.
Okay.
All right, let's go to this. Load management.
Mm-hmm.
I don't love it. I get it for Kawhi.
Right.
James Harden's making a point. I'm here every night.
Right,
LeBron's like, I'm here every night. Do you like it?
You know, I don't necessarily like it in the general sense of the term. I don't like the term. I think that Kawhi is a special situation because he had an injury. And he's starting to trust himself again. You know, when a guy misses basketball for a year with something. One thing people, you know, overlook is the ability to trust yourself and trust your body again. So I think he probably has some of that in there. And then the nature of that injury, the quad. So I think there may be, you know, some specific benefit for him. But as for everybody else, you know, if you're healthy, you should be playing.
That's kind of how I feel.
I mean, it's just
we've both been sick and shown up.
Yeah. If you're healthy,
you play.
You should play. Period. Yeah.
Are you shocked that LeBron's moved a point? The Lakers' offense is seamless. Not that he's just not great, but he is 35 minutes a night, 11 assists a game. Everything works. Looks like Danny Green and him have played together for 10 years. Yeah. Are you shocked at his seamless transition to a new position?
No, I really don't think he's doing anything different than he's always done. I think, you know, probably on those other teams, there was more a defined point guard on the roster. I mean, Rondo's on the roster. But I think, you know, he's made that move, but it's a position that he's always played. He's always been a facilitator. You've always been able to play, you know, win games with him handling the ball, him making the majority of the decisions. I do think, though, this is, you know, aside from the Miami cast, this is probably the most talented group he's been a part of.
No, Danny Green can play. Kuzma's 16 a game. Anthony's top.
Yeah.
No, it's a good.
It's a good group.
It's a good group, and it's also a smart group. Last right. year's team was a little too just goofy.
Right. Not ready.
It's just guys who are 10-day contract guys. Odd person. Nothing against Lance Stevenson, but that
right.
doesn't feel like LeBron.
Right.
Danny Green, AD.
Right.
That feels like LeBron's guys.
Right.
You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
And that matters. That personality, your star gets along with the other guys.
Absolutely. And those are guys who, you know, because AD is in, I would say, the prime of his career or not even yet. And he's obviously one of the greats we have in the game now. But playing alongside a guy like LeBron puts him in a position to, like, learn, right, and to figure things out for himself. It allows him to step onto this sort of stage of expectations where people are expecting you to win big, right? Win in the playoffs. He didn't have that in New Orleans. These are things he's going to have to learn, you know, from LeBron. And I think it's going to make him, you know, that's just that much more better.
By the way, you've got a project called the Historical Basketball League, the first college basketball league to enable athletes to benefit from their talent, marketability, hard work. Minute left. What is it?
It's a professional college basketball league. You know, that's what we're working on. We want to create an opportunity for athletes, particularly in basketball, to have an opportunity to share and have an equitable stake in this huge business that they help.
So will they be college or will they be pre-college, current college, or post-college?
They'll be current college. They'll be current college players in terms of the age. So 18 to 23, we want to you know, be an intermediate step into the pro ranks without the confines of the current collegiate system.
It's absolutely great having you on the show. You're a wealth of information.
Appreciate that, man.
And I appreciate your honesty about the Warriors situation. A lot of the stuff we thought was happening was happening. I was a little shocked he left, but it happens in life. David West, you're always welcome back on the show.
Appreciate it, man.
I love old school NBA guys. Mm-hmm. The best.